once again.
Is it impossible for you not to go in the beginning of it?
Dude, I can't help it. Listen, it's pretty Space great. Toast. Again, we start this out. Got to give shout out props to Space Toast, my man. The original audio for us, man.
He's still out there, man, I think.
Ladies and gentlemen, the music means one thing and one thing only. We are back. It's to Dallas.
I was thinking today. Josh. I was thinking today. It's like, let's not do We're Back. Because it's like, we're back for one episode every 6 months.
Listen,
but
we're here. We are back. To Dallas. Taking a dump and thinking about shit.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Find us all over the web wherever you get your podcast.
True story.
If you know where we are, then you know where we are. Welcome to the show, people.
Yeah, we're back. We're back. We're back. In the mix.
Cheers,
in the mix. Cheers. Usually we drink bourbon. We have bourbon on the table, but we didn't make it bourbon yet. That's okay.
Well, a little beer, a little wine, a little kickoff start here, man. It's first time, long time.
First time, long time.
Yeah, it's like a long time listener. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we started with sports. Let's stay with sports. Listen today.
Should we explain to people who we are? What we do? It's not us. We haven't been in a while.
Yeah, go for it.
Tanatis taking a dump and thinking about shit. It's a podcast where we basically record our thoughts while in the bathroom, and those are basically the blueprint for solving the world's problems. So
basically, how we can and will solve the world's problems, save the world, save our other people's world. Maybe I don't know.
Yes, or just like laugh at the world. I think that's really the most what we do.
We do all the time.
We definitely start out with some sports, local sports. Sports are back in the mix. It's March, so there's baseball.
So today, hold on, I want to take a note. Today's the 30th.
Sorry, we can get back to Astros. Yeah. I just had to have that.
Yeah, no,
handy.
That's perfect. That's perfect. Listen, we'll come back to baseball. Listen, so it's March 30th. It's my wife's birthday. So
okay,
today there was the Shell Houston. There used to be Shell Houston Open. It's the Texas Children's Houston Open. I happened to get an invite to this, and I didn't know. I knew a free ticket. So what I didn't know was the only other time I've been to a tournament like this was the Shell Houston Open when it was out in Atascocita, and we had passes to the United Club. Kevin went with Manny. And they had passes to the Lexus Club, which was on the 18th green.
I feel like I went with you to that event.
We called you. We had you come out and join us.
Yeah, I think so. There's some free booze there.
So what would have happened?
Golf tournament. Free booze.
Free booze, free food. So Kevin sends me the picture because I knew they were going. I didn't know that they had the Lexus Club, which didn't change the fact that it's my wife's birthday. And happy birthday, dear. And the right choice was made, which was
It's easy. Golf tournaments are kind of boring.
Oh, I love the golf tournament.
They're still kind of boring.
Well, anyways. Kevin went, sent me pictures, and I said, where the hell are you at? And he sent me, he's like, you got to zoom in. It's a digital. You can see the nice number 18 there. I'm like, you fucker. And he's like, oh, he's like, by the way, today for breakfast, I don't know what you had, but I had a filet mignon and crab cake and open bar. And I'm like, I hope you stub your toe and get diarrhea.
That's what we're going to talk about the first out of the gates is how you're jealous of your brother going to a golf tournament that nobody really cares about.
Well,
golf is boring.
That's happened today. And then we also have the March Madness. Listen, that's where we dive into for a second. Then we'll come back to the Astros.
Very lead.
Listen. March Madness.
Uh-huh.
We were just talking about the bracket. You didn't do a bracket. I didn't do a bracket. First time in a long time. I've not done one. The tournament itself has been great. Lots of fun. This year is the first year. So I pulled it up. Since 2015, that there's all four number ones have made the Elite Eight, let alone the Final Four.
Yeah. I mean, that's curious.
You had all ones and twos except four. So you had 3-1-2 set matchups and then 1-1-3 matchup. So only one number two didn't make it to the Elite Eight. All four of the Final Four are the number one seeds.
What does that mean at all? I mean, it doesn't mean anything at all.
That they're the number one seeds that made the bracket,
what does that mean for you? Like, why are you mentioning it?
Well, it's not often that it happens. The last time it happened, like I said, was 15 or 16. The last time all four of the number ones even made the Elite Eight was in 16. That's what it was. All four number ones haven't made the Final Four since 2015, so 10 years. And all four number ones have not even made the Elite Eight in 9 years.
Yeah, I get you. What does that mean, though?
It's just sometimes there's parity, sometimes there's not. Maybe they picked them right. Maybe there was less Cinderellas, but the Cinderellas this year, I feel like after the first three games, you already had millions of brackets busted. It was down to like 2% that were still perfect.
Yeah.
So I didn't pick a bracket because I don't have cable anymore, but we can stream some stuff. And so I've seen some games.
Well, I think that what the bracket is for college basketball is and why that really fits it is kind of okay. Let me kind of back up to go forward a little bit. I don't know if it was me and you talking the other day about how American sports is relatively unique in the world where that we crown our champion typically after a regular season of seeding and then a postseason playoff, right?
Sure.
NBA football, baseball, all of them, all the American sports do that. Even MLS does that. And this is kind of rare in sports. Most like European baseball, soccer, all those, like, I don't know about baseball in Japan. I don't know if they have a playoff or not. Anyways, the point is that it's kind of two different elements of like how you crown your champion, right? One is like the grind of the season. The other one is, you know, kind of this sprint to a championship tournament style, right? So
sure.
The NCAA really mastered that tournament style, you know, both the idea of having the best teams in the best spot to be playing late in the tournament, and also this, you know, the Cinderella story, the idea of teams that, you know, barely even should be kind of playing against the other teams. Throw the lineups and throw all the media coverage out the window when the ball's tipped, right?
Sure.
I think that's what makes, in my opinion, the NCAA basketball tournament so special. It's the crapshoot. It's the idea of, you know, even the experts that rank them, you know what I mean? Like, again, they're almost never right with regard to the best teams that they think make it to the Final Four. So that's kind of my question around this is, like, what's the takeaway? To me, the takeaway is the chalk, that they finally got it right. Like, the chalk finally won. And, you know, some people will fill out brackets just saying, okay, they picked him number one, so why wouldn't I pick him number one all the way to go through? And, like, there's it's not a bad gamble with regard to, like, completing a pretty good bracket, right?
It's sure,
highly,
sure.
Highly probable that if not a multiple of those teams will make it to the Final Four. And now we have all four of them, which is super interesting and curious.
That's the assumption. It's the assumption and or the trust in, yes, the pundits who not only put together their brackets and all the guys, the, you know, quote-unquote experts that talk about it, but the rankings, as they actually rank these teams when they, yeah, you know, the selection show, and you get the number one seeds. And those number one seeds, obviously it's based on season record, and they do a strength of schedule in there.
Sure, there's a lot of variables, and they're like routinely wrong. You know,
well, and yeah, so there's a lot of times you still even like if you, it's I don't remember honestly. That's why I had to look it up. The last time the number ones all made the Final Four, and I was also pretty certain like it was been a while since they'd made the Elite Eight, because there are Cinderella stories.
Sure.
But I mean, it's also that's the beauty and the fun of the tournament. My favorite game of the tournament so far was Texas Tech and Arkansas.
Okay.
And Arkansas was a 10 seed. Arkansas is the one that knocked out the only number two to not make the Elite Eight. They played Texas Tech in the Sweet 16. In that tournament, or in that game, in the second half, they're up 16. Texas Tech came back from 16 down, which is the largest deficit in a Sweet 16 game ever, to win the game. They forced overtime and won it. But my fun with, besides watching and enjoying it all, was, you know, I mean, and stats, right? I love statistics. Well, Arkansas on the season is, you know, the sub 30% 3-point shooting team, and they averaged 7 makes a game. In the first half of the game against Tech, they made 8. They shot 8 of 9. Mm. So they already were above average for the whole season, right? Tech, on the other hand,
overachieving.
Yeah, Tech, on the other hand, for the season was 38% from downtown, and their first half was 3 of 20. Water finds its level. The Razorbacks made 1 3 in the second half, so they finished with 9 threes, and I think they finished 9 of 20. The Red Raiders made 6 of 8, 6 of 9 in the second half, come back and caught them.
Yeah, that statistical kind of, you said water finds its level. That thought is why I love baseball so much. It's like, you know, you can take a small sample size of a player, but it's like, you know, let's look at larger stats. Let's look at, you know, all the different variables. And baseball is probably the best way of breaking that down. Let's do real quick for the people. Do you know, or you can look at it now, the matchups, and can you handicap that for us? I mean, we're homers here, obviously, but like, who you got in the final? Who you got win this whole thing?
Man, I tell you what, the scariest team that I've seen is Duke. Obviously, yes, they're playing U of H, and I've got Cougs. Whose house? Cougs' house. But all of these number ones throughout this tournament have played their asses off, and they've looked like legit number ones. Mm-hmm. And they look like world beaters. There have been moments in their games, though, where I don't know if they took their foot off the gas or the other team just pulled their head out of their ass, something. Mm. But you had gaps that were large, and then you got games that got tight, and then they pulled them back out of the way. So it wasn't just a cakewalk. But Duke beating Bama yesterday, Bama also overachieved the game before. They shot 25 of 51 from downtown, and on the season they're like a 30% 3-point shooting team. Mm. Against Duke, they made 25%, 8 out of 32. Duke didn't shoot bad. So again, water finding its level, statistics are statistics. Yes, nobody shoots 25 of 50 from fucking downtown consistently. Unless your name is Steph Curry.
Yeah. Well, to me, that's, I think that's why probably in I don't know, I'm going to say this, I think this through, probably in most, in all sports, I would say, I think I'm going to say that all sports, I think the coach in college basketball is the most important. And what I mean by that is, like, okay, my definition of greatness is performing at your top at the most critical moments, right?
Sure.
The tournament kind of is an example of that, right? Who is going to step up? Who is going to be the one that's knocking down threes? Who's got the ice water in their veins versus the one who's choking, right? And so to me, that's where coaches are so important. They can calm, they can calm they can take a streaky shooter from a slump to, you know, some kind of something else, right? Get them out of that funk.
Well, sure, and they can get their guys moving the right way,
right?
Just
they
organize
them. They can set up an offensive play. Somebody's talking about the U of H inbound play, which was pretty spectacular. And
that was against Purdue.
You're right.
Purdue, honestly, I've watched that replay a bunch, and I have yet to actually hear the commentators talk about it. But that play to me looks like completely busted defense on behalf of Purdue, because you had the guy that was guarding the baseline, the inbounder, he left the inbounder to take the guy off the pick and roll.
Right.
He left the inbounder on the baseline to go after the guy who got free on the screen. You had a guy standing like a statue in the middle of the fucking paint, who should have rotated to the guy off the screen.
Right.
He didn't.
A missed assignment.
And so when both of them missed their assignment, fucked it up. And so by leaving the guy, the inbounder, and the guy in the paint not doing anything, realizing he needs to be on the guy on the screen, he then went that way. Nobody's guarding the paint, and nobody's guarding the inbounder. So it was a pass to you, pass right back to me, and I'm the score.
Yeah, and of course the offensive player like just sees that small little mental lapse, like that look down, and it's like, hey, you did it, completely exposed, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so U of H. I guess it's a local team here. I'm not a huge U of H fan necessarily, but you know, we have a connection here. What is your like thoughts on their actual chances of winning this thing? You know, kind of unpack that piece of it.
So I don't know their record off the top of my head this year. Again, I've seen less of it without the cable. However, I know that Kelvin Sampson and the Cougs are back in the Final Four. They've been Elite Eight Final Four the last handful of seasons. He's running. He's got a good team, a good club. He's built there. There's a good culture, and with that, there's a consistent level of performance coming from the Cougars. It's a lot of great defense, good shooting, but defense is primary, like it's key. First and foremost, defense.
It's a well coached team. They make big shots. He's got the X's and O's to drop a ridiculous play to like again draw everything off him.
Yeah.
When it comes down to coaching, I think you're probably seeing the best two coaches in the tournament going up against each other in that game. Correct?
Probably so. Yeah. And Duke looks, they look tough, man. You asked me if I remove the homer, who do I think like has the advantage? It's Duke. Duke has looked like it from the jump, and they just beat Bama by 20 fucking points.
I think at this point in the tournament, when Duke's in it, you're like, they got a shot to win it all. You know what I mean? Again, the coaching thing, the coaching aspect. Yeah, they smoked U of H. Smoked who they played? Was it Tennessee today? They smoked them. They were up by 20 most of the game.
Yeah,
I remember there's a point, by the way, and I'm kind of hitting on Kelvin Sampson a little bit. There's a point in the game where Houston's up like 15 or 16, and one of the superstar 3-point shooter, but name starts with an A. I can't remember exactly what it is. Like he missed an assignment, I think defensively, and Sampson's giving him the. I mean, he's really getting into him in the sideline, and like I love that. Like I don't care we're up 15 right now.
Yeah,
this is a long
As you say that, it makes me think. And we've talked about it before. Yeah. Pop with fucking Tony what's his name, Danny Green. When they were playing in that NBA Finals against fucking, they had the Heat down. They were killing. Anyways, yeah.
While we're on U of H, before we get into sports, have you heard the Akeem Olajuwon to Houston story? You're about to hear it now.
I mean, I do know it, but go ahead, play it.
It was such a strange story from the beginning. We'd all heard the stories about what he'd done in Africa, how he played a little bit of basketball, not a lot. He played team handball, he played soccer. And we really had nothing to pin it on because none of us had ever seen him play before he got to Houston.
A guy named Chris Pond is sending this kid over.
Christopher Pond, he was coaching Central Africa. He said, well, if I arrange the visa, will you go? I said, of course.
Hakeem lands at JFK in New York, and St. John's is supposed to meet him. No one's there. He has three other tickets, one for Louisville, the University of Houston, and Providence. He walks outside of JFK, and it's cold.
As soon as I opened that door, the breeze that hit me from the outside. There's no way I couldn't even go outside, so I just went straight back in. What am I gonna do?
He sees a baggage handler that happens to be Nigerian, and he asks him, hey, which one of these have weather similar to Lagos, Nigeria? The baggage handler looks. He says, Houston.
So I changed my tickets, cash the next plane to Houston. So I got to Houston, and nobody was there.
Guy Lewis tells Mike Young and I, he says, look for a kid from Africa, probably will be about 6'7". I'm like, okay.
And so he said, if the guy is 6'6", 6'7", we're gonna send him back.
Mike Young and I see Akeem, and he keeps growing, growing, and growing. I'm like, no, he's a 7-footer, all right. But he only weighs about 170 pounds. And I call up Coach Lewis. I said, hey, Coach, it's Eric Davis. He goes, you got the kid? He says, I got him. I says, you know, he's 7 feet tall. He goes, well.
Basketball-wise, he was a kindergartner. He didn't know much about the sport. He didn't know how to play the game.
Akeem had something you couldn't teach. He had the ability to go and get the ball off the rim, and he probably had the best timing. It was a lot for him as a young guy, and he earned the right to be on the floor.
He is a competitor.
Excuse me, Miss Nick.
So one of the favorite things about that story, and I've heard it, is that how U of H actually, for all extents and purposes, ended up getting him is the fucking weather. Like, he asked a baggage handler which one is closest in weather to Lagos, Nigeria. The fact that you happen to run into a fucking Nigerian, I mean, it's not that hard, but it's also he sought out a Nigerian, found him, asked him, and the dude said Houston. And just based on weather alone, the fact that when he landed in fucking New York, it was too cold.
Yep.
Thank you. It's beautiful.
Yep.
And then, you know, the rest is history. I was having this conversation with a guy the other night at the bar, which was the 84 NBA draft, right? The Rockets take Olajuwon. The Portland Trailblazers at 2 take Sam Bowie. The Bulls take Jordan at 3. There's really not a whole lot of any hullabaloo, any ruffled feathers about the Rockets taking Olajuwon.
Right.
It's Sam Bowie going to Portland, too. That's the fucking mistake.
Well, yeah, in hindsight. But in the time, like, I don't think the draft fell out like people thought it would fall out. You know what I mean? Like, everybody got what they wanted. And, you know, in a situation where Akeem goes home, you know what I mean? Like, he stays in Houston. That's a big deal for the organization. Yeah. And, you know, obviously for, you know, the icon that becomes for the city.
Fire slam Jumbo.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I just love, you know, all the pieces of all these different stories. Let me rephrase that. Like, sometimes just happenstance, it seems like all these things kind of come together, and it's like, you know, a legend is kind of made.
Right. I don't believe in coincidence, but there was a lot of things that happened to come together to make it work.
Yeah,
and I think we're seeing something similar there.
I think it's a cool story, but let's transition to opening day a couple days away, or a couple days ago.
Right. Frommer gets the win on day one.
Yeah, let's talk preseason like thoughts. It's a big transition year for the Astros. A lot of familiar faces gone.
All right,
some new faces.
Preseason thoughts is this, simply this.
Let's break it all the way down.
Alex Bregman is dead to me.
Okay, let's break it all the way down. Let's break it all the way down. Start from the beginning. So we Alex Bregman out. He's a free agent. Astros make a run at him. Like 6 years, 100 and something, blah blah million.
Yep.
He decides to sign with the Red Sox 3 years.
That's also missing part of the meat on the bone there, if I may. Like, Bregman gets the offer from the Astros. He says he doesn't want it. He wants 7 or more. He wants $30 million a year or more.
Well,
he rejects the Astros' offer. Him and his agent Scott Boras put him on the market. The market is fucking crickets. Nobody's offering him anything, and nowhere near what he wants. He got a couple of shorter offers, but he didn't get 7 or more, and he wasn't getting the numbers he wanted. Then he came back to the Astros and wanted to come back to the table.
I don't think that's extra.
That's what the story is. I've read it was that he came back and they wanted to reopen negotiations, but he also wanted the Astros to amend the offer. When the Astros said, we offered you this, and there's no reason to,
he then
signs the next day with the Red Sox for shorter.
Yeah, so everything you're saying to me is speculation. I don't know if – I mean, there were some things reported, and some of those things hit what you were saying. To me, this is my takeaway. My takeaway was Alex Bregman, just like Correa, just like Springer, was tired of getting booed. there's something about being stuck to that cheating scandal that I think all of them wanted to separate themselves. That is really, I think that was really the highest motivation for specifically those particular players. You look at, you know, look what Correa ended up taking, look what Springer ended up taking. I don't think this Astros made a competitive offer to Springer, but we did for Bregman, and I think we did for Correa, specifically with the idea that Correa signed the 3, you know, player opt-out deal with Minnesota. Yeah. You know, all that being said, I mean, it is what it is. It's a business, right? And
sure.
And like, you know, Bregman dead to me, sure. But I don't know, man. It's never gonna take away the memories of those championships and all that grit and, you know, all that. Like, it is what it is to me. Like, not dead to me, but I really am leaning into this idea that he just didn't want to be booed anymore. He was just tired of being associated with that and didn't want to have the rest of his career being a cheater. And so it's easier, in my opinion. Like, it's. I mean, Springer doesn't get booed anymore in the same way. Neither does Correa.
I don't know that to be true or false.
Me either. I'm just saying that's the thing that makes the most sense to me.
I understand that. I mean, that makes logical sense, and I don't dismiss it. It's just, when I say dead to me, as I read about it, it wasn't a party of any of the conversations. Yeah. But as it was read, as I read it, it was laid out, I understood it was, you know, he didn't get another offer that were worth a shit, and he came back and then had the gall to ask for us to tweak our number, et cetera. Bottom line is that the real answer wasn't the money. It wasn't that. I believe there was something else. And I don't think you're far off at all on not wanting to be booed. That said, though, I'd really rather him just say, hey, this is what I'm looking for. This is what I want to do.
But that's not.
I understand. That's, you know, of course, fine. That's what I would rather.
We're fans. Like, you know, we're fans.
And
in
so
in
dead
a way
to
that,
me is
yeah.
like I'm hurt more by his departure, the way he went about it, than the other three. Like Springer leaving, it stung, but I have no ill will or any hard feelings. Correa, I didn't really have hard feelings, but it rubbed me the wrong way a little bit.
How about this?
This one rubs me the wrong way the most.
How about this? I'm going to I'll just say it like this. I think the Carlos Beltran not signing hurt me way more than Bregman not signing. How about that?
Mm.
Yeah. Because I kind of expected Bregman to go, and I think I kind of understood why. Like, again, I think it was the booing. To me, it's the booing thing, and I kind of get it. You know, I kind of get the idea. They're never going to take those World Series away from him. They're never going to take that piece of his career away. But, you know, if you just don't want to deal with that aspect, you don't want to always be associated with that. And the change of scenery has proven to kind of lessen that for a lot of players in a way that, you know – yeah, I there's some people that like that antagonistic. Barry Bonds seemed to lean into that a little bit, but you know, some people maybe just don't want that.
Sure.
That being said, let's talk about the players. Okay, also we have to talk about Kyle Tucker leaving the team as well. And so these are completely different scenarios.
Yeah.
Bregman is a free agent, and we let him play out his last career. We didn't trade him. You know, last season of his contract. Sorry. Whereas Kyle Tucker was going to be a free agent this year, and so we got ahead of that and traded him and got 3 arguably major leaguers. At the time, we thought it was, you know, 2 major leaguers and a really nice prospect. Cam Smith has now made the team, which is an interesting story in itself.
Yeah, fastest one in history. That's pretty trippy.
Isaac Paredes is now going to be your third baseman, and I think he fits the Crawford boxes really well. I have a note that I want to track his stats versus Bregman's stats at
defensive stats or hitting?
Both yeah. Across the board. I think Bregman's going to be a better defensive player, but I think Paredes is going to put up numbers that are going to be comparable to what Bregman is doing. And I think Bregman is kind of – I think we saw a little bit of Bregman's slide in his career last year. I think that was maybe another reason why the Astros didn't want to go big bucks for him. It's like, man, we could unload Kyle Tucker, get your replacement, get maybe a future, you know, superstar in Cam Smith. And we also got a pitcher out of it.
I don't know.
He's going to be your 5th starter, and that's not including Lance McCullers, which he pitched
sassy.
He pitched Lance today for the what the fuck's their name? The
Skeeters?
No, they're not the Skeeters anymore.
Space Cowboys,
yeah. And I saw he threw 1 complete inning with 2 strikeouts, hit 95 on the gun, and had a really wicked curveball. So having him join your pitching rotation this year is like having a free agent signing
if he stays healthy.
If he can
come back and actually be anything, he'd be 80%+ of what Lance McCullers was, man. Yeah. I agree.
So you know, taking it all into consideration, like this is the way I wrote this thing down, and I want you to kind of think of it like this. All right, if you look at Bregman out with regards to the corner infielders, okay. So last year it was Bregman and Abreu, okay. So Bregman and Abreu out. In is Paredes and what the guy's name? Walker, I think.
Christian Walker.
Yeah. So in Christian Walker, Isaac Paredes out, Bregman and Jose Abreu. I think the Astros are better at the corner infield spots this year, given that consideration. Fair?
Sure. Yeah. Again, I they've only played one series. I haven't seen them. But
I'm just saying on paper. On paper, I think Christian Walker's going to be a heck of an offensive player, and he's a really good defensive player as well.
By
and
the
really
way, one thing I would say is I looked up just a second ago. I wanted to see the last major league start that Sassy Lance had.
It was
November 1st, 2022 in the World Series.
Yeah, pitched in the World Series the last time he started. He had two Tommy Johns, I think.
Yes, he's been out for three seasons.
You know, there's also a talk about the transition in persona in the clubhouse, right? Out Correa, out Bregman, out Springer. Lance and Altuve are kind of the last of that, specifically the 2017.
The
run,
old
but
guard.
Really, yeah.
They're the old guard.
All right, so I broke down. I would like to think of the Bregman out situation as let's look at the corner infielders, Abreu out, Bregman out, in is Paredes and Walker, and kind of judge it in that like that regard because yeah,
sure.
I understand it's not apples to apples,
it's as close as we can.
Because if you do you know you did upgrade it at the first base position dramatically again on paper. By the way, I read something today. It's like we traded one 3-year $60 million player who couldn't hit for Christian Walker hasn't got a hit I think at all. That being said, also his stats, he has the hardest exit velocity of any Astro so far. He's just getting bad luck.
Bad break so far.
Yeah, he's hitting the ball.
I thought Christian Walker got a home run the other day. I don't know. I could be wrong.
I don't think so. I think it's like 1-for-12 or something like that. But he's hitting the ball really hard. 99 on the.
Well, as you were talking about, by comparison, the corners like giving it a logical numerical review. Like same thing when Correa left. Jeremy Pena was the heir apparent, but he stepped up big and he had
a good year.
He's filled the shoes, right? He's not Correa, but I don't personally miss Correa defensively or offensively. Honestly, the only thing I say I miss a lot, I've said it many times, right, is Correa was the vocal leader.
Yeah. I think that's another thing about having Lance McCullers back in that dugout. Contributing as a player will be big because he just kind of filled that void as a team or a clubhouse leader.
Voice,
All right, so we did the Bregman thing. Bregman out, Paredes in. We're gonna lose some offensive production. Probably definitely a downgrade defensively as well. But Christian Walker is an upgrade offensively from Jose Abreu and everybody else you had over there, Singleton and the platoon. Yeah. He's also a pretty solid to plus defensive first baseman. So I think you're if you take those two things combined, I think the Astros are better this year. That being said, there's a big gaping hole. Like, there's no way Cam Smith's going to be able to produce or replace Kyle Tucker's production.
Well, I was just saying, Kyle Tucker, like, the one thing, like, I don't have any animosity against Kyle Tucker.
Well, how could you? He got traded.
Well,
it was his fault.
He performed. He had numbers. He asked for contracts, and he was not given.
He didn't ask for a contract.
He was asking for, I mean, he was saying last year during the season, at least, again, rumored, that he was trying to push for getting the extension during the season, et cetera.
I never heard that.
Either way, what I'm saying is the Astros did not do that, and instead of even fucking with the contract for him, they traded him.
Okay.
And so what I'm saying is I have zero animosity whatsoever, and I wish him the best. When I go back to Bregman, when I say he's dead to me, like I kind of want to see him fall flat.
Okay, that's fine. I get it. That's fandom 101. To me, the Kyle Tucker thing, he has no choice. He got traded. He was in his last year of arbitration eligibility, and he'd won his arbitration case, which means he was making, pretty good money, and he was going to get paid. The Astros, think about this. We talked about Springer. We talked about Bregman. We talked about Correa. All those guys, they let them get to their contract year and then tried to – they didn't extend him like they did Altuve.
Yeah.
Right? Even if they attempted to, they were unable to do that, number one. Number two, they let them get their contract year and were unable to re-sign them, meaning there's another philosophy that says, hey, if you're going to lose a guy, let's trade him and get something back for him. That is what they did with Kyle Tucker.
Yeah.
So there is an element of we got three major leaguers now, two and a half. Let's just still call Cam Smith a project. But you got two and a half major leaguers for Kyle Tucker. So there is something about that. It's like, hey, we pretty much maximize that. If Cam Smith turns into be a stud or at least a regular major leaguer, three regular major leaguers for Kyle Tucker is a win for the Astros.
Kyle
Tucker may be the top 15, 20 hitter in the league, and it's still a win for the Astros.
Yeah.
So, on paper, I'm not mad at those moves. They make business sense, and like how I like to think of it, they make baseball sense.
No, I agree. They definitely make both business and baseball sense. And I think that obviously right now let's just go super homer, right? The sky's the limit. Winning the first series, this is better start than last year. Two wins, one loss. Win the first game with Framber. Lose the second game with Hunter Brown. Win the third game with Old Spaghetti.
Hunter Brown looked good. He had some pop. Juan Soto's going to hit home runs. It happens.
Yeah.
The future is definitely, I think the team's gonna be better than maybe the I feel like there's a lot of fair weather fans in Houston. They're like, oh, Bregman's gone. There goes the dynasty. And I'm like, man, I think that this team is as exciting as I've seen in a couple years.
Like the golden era. It's been called, and it's not wrong as a moniker for it, right? That this is the golden era of Astros baseball. That said, like, I don't. Is that golden era over? I don't know. Is the window still open?
I couldn't tell you.
I don't know because. Again, we have young players. You have young players. You have a different roster. You have a different team, and every year is different. Like, what if they make the AL championship? Does that mean the golden era is over, or is it still going strong?
Well, I think last year was the first year in like 7 or 8 that they didn't win the AL West. Which is kind of a sign of like, that run is over. That being said, they make another World Series run. I think this team is capable. Of course, you're gonna have to get pitching, and get timely hitting. Altuve to left field is a very curious experiment. I understand it. I've had some people break it down in a statistical way.
I don't feel like super good or strong one way or the other on that. How about that?
The high level is Altuve's range as a lead defensive second baseman is starting to wane, and there are countless examples of infielders. I mean, Craig Biggio is a great example of infielders that you put in the outfield. Otherwise,
first of all, let's put some respect on it. Biggio was a catcher, then second base, right, then outfield.
Right. All right, we're about halfway through this thing. Let's take a little breaky break, and we'll be right back.
So, as we come back from making another drink here, the Rockets is the last sports we're going to touch on. They won tonight 148-109 over Phoenix, which has them 11 wins in the last 12 games. This young team is on pace for 50. They're running it down, which, dude, I would have never guessed that was something that it was even in the realm of possibility. And not to overlook this team, it's a young team, man.
It seems like they're about 1 year ahead of pace, right? Like, they've got the young talent starting to come around. They got the coach. Everything's starting to, it seems like they're a little ahead of pace. Like, one more draft and or one big star splash in a trade makes this team a contender kind of situation. That being said, I still think that's like a next year move. I really appreciate the fact they did not make that move this year. There's a lot of talk about Kevin Durant coming to the Rockets, and there's still talk about maybe he comes in the offseason.
Well, I saw that. What I saw, one thing about that was it said if we're going to get KD, Dylan Brooks is going to be a part of that trade. And it's like, dude, I don't want to give up Dylan Brooks, but it's KD.
Yeah,
like,
and KD really is – he's a heck of an offensive player. One of the best ever to do it. But he's also a defensive pest. Like, he's tough. He's a tough defender. He's a seven-foot-tall guard.
By the way, so the Rockets are 49-26. I say running down 50 wins. They need one more, baby.
Yeah.
By the way, that makes them second in the West. Yep. And then I was texting a buddy of mine from back in the United Auto Credit days, Jason, in Oklahoma. Do you know the fucking Thunder are 62-12?
Yeah, man. They
74 games, you've lost 12, guys?
They're way ahead of the the Rockets, even. And the Rockets are number 2 in the West. They're way ahead of them in
13 games, 13 wins, 14 losses.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely freaking bonkers. How well they've done this season, the Rockets, and they're so far behind. But yet, what am I trying to say? They're just an afterthought for most people. It's a nice season, but young team.
Only because last year they had a decent. I want to say they ended 41-41, which is fine.
They had a really good stretch early on, and they kind of fizzled towards the end of the season.
Also coming off of you lost all your big names, and it's rebuilding. You got a bunch of youngsters, et cetera, all that stuff. But I bought into them last year based on what I watched over and over, which was a young team that just went out there and played fucking hard. They just play hard, man. And as I've watched them, what I've loved, and every time I've been able to see it in show Elijah, I'm like, this is what I'm talking about. Living embodiment of just not quitting. The clock's not zero yet. The game's not over. Fucking fight. Just fight, because you never know what's going to happen if you go out there and just keep fighting. And that's what they did last year. That's what they've done this year. That's why they're so much fun to watch, in my opinion.
Yeah, and similar to that, I was talking about Kelvin Sampson, like, eating up a player who missed an assignment. I've seen I forget the name, Ime Udoka, the coach. I've seen him do that too early in the game, just like, hey, you missed an assignment. Like, it's about consistency, it's about standards, it's about team play. There's a whole lot of that I really appreciate from the coach, and I feel like this team, there's talent there, there's team camaraderie, there's a lot of stuff going on, and like, hats off to the organization for not making that splash move and trying to make it, getting out ahead ahead of the process, meaning like not sacrificing players before you really, you know, this.
Sure, before you have to.
Yeah, like it's great the team is going to finish probably very likely in the second seed in the West, which gives all the benefits of that. But still, you know, if they make a Western Conference final, again, that's ahead of
it's way ahead of the expectations.
Opinion, right. Yeah. So like,
and the fact that they clinched the playoffs already, also that's ahead of just schedule in general, because Rockets, it's been since the James Harden era, yeah, so that they were at this point in the season where you already clinched playoffs, but you're locked in number two pretty much.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
And I love it. To me, it's coaching, and the hats off to the organization for making the moves they had to make to get here. That James Harden trade seems like it keeps paying off and keeps paying off and keeps paying off. We got draft picks galore still. So yeah, the Rockets' future looks very, very bright. I'm tuned in for the first time in a long time, and I'm kind of excited to see them in a little bit of a playoff run. I want to
randomly also basketball. I saw it tonight on X, you know, Twitter for those old farts like me. I still call it Twitter. Anyways, Chris Paul's retiring.
Good for him.
Yeah, listen, I have, and I'll say it, I've always intentionally saying always. I've always had a love for CP3, man. Out of Wake Forest, handles just skills with the ball.
Yeah. He had that element of like doing it the right way, hard nosed player.
And
you know what I mean?
Everywhere, every
nonsense
team he played for,
yeah,
like somehow. I felt like he became a pariah somehow.
A bit of a bad teammate reputation.
Yeah,
it seems like he always ran out of his welcome. But like as on the court, yeah, I'd go to battle with him. That stretch he had with the Rockets, whatever that was, 17-18. Those couple runs, like it's a travesty.
We're CP3's fucking hamstring tear,
yeah, it's a
away from a fucking title
that we didn't get to play in the finals and see that team compete. Absolutely. Anything else in the Rockets?
I'm excited. That's it.
All right, let's watch something else exciting.
This wrestling. For those of you, he's pulling up right now. This is a video of that the college wrestling.
Oh, he's to the left this time. He's sliding off. Oh, we're going to get big here. On the high crotch.
To the double.
And he's running down.
Oh, my God.
He's on down.
Oh, my God. Can you believe this?
Oh, my God.
Henderson with the three. Game about a hustle. The Olympic champ is about to lose. It's 13 seconds.
This could be it. NCAA, could this be it? Yes, has done it.
That's amazing.
Well, and so the guy.
Hold on, clip's not over yet. But yeah, go ahead.
Hold on, it's loud, so I'll just leave it.
Go ahead.
So the,
do you know what happens next, by the way?
That's Cormier going nuts, first of all.
Uh-huh.
Daniel Cormier,
uh-huh,
former Olympic wrestler himself. Uh-huh. The guy, so that's the guy.
UFC legend. Also,
that's the guy there who is a
Olympic gold medalist.
Right. Well, he was undefeated,
mm-hmm,
and he's the one that John Jones went and trained wrestling with before his last fight.
Olympic gold medalist means best in the world.
Yeah.
Best in the world, and he just got beat in a college final.
Yeah. Oops.
Okay. So,
heart, baby.
Okay. There's controversy. Do you know the controversy?
No.
Let's see if it.
Isn't it because he's short? Something about him being short and his wife, his chick's really tall or something?
I
heard something about that.
Let's see if we see it here. Yeah, so the I don't know anything about wrestling, but like the way the announcers call that, you got the feeling of how exciting that was and how, you know, upset. That's huge. All right, we don't get to see it, but so Trump's in the audience in this, by the way.
Okay.
And he goes up and gives Trump a big hug, and Trump's doing the whole Trump point. You know what I mean? Like, that's my guy. When he walks out before it, he's wearing, I want to say something like a Jesus shirt. You know what I mean? Like this. So the controversy is, you know what I mean? Like all that entails, right? That's you know, all the negative stigma or positive stigma or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, basically, it's another example of like, oh, this is Trump, right? This is a Trumpian Trump something. Does that make sense? What I'm saying? That's
the
where there's
Jesus
some
shirt is also Trumping. Is that what you're saying or no?
Yeah, well, it's like the Jesus shirt, I think, represents like conservatism and Trump. Like, I think I want to say Trump was in the audience, like in the audience kind of thing. Let's see if I can find a video of that, of him going and giving a hug. But like that's kind of the thing. The takeaway from this is the controversy. Hang on 1 second.
So here's the video of him pointing at Trump.
Saluting Trump. He's got the American flag.
I can't believe it.
Trump's in the audience.
Well, listen.
Fist bumping.
For what it's absolutely 1,000% worth, proper military greeting for the president is a fucking salute.
I get you.
Period.
Well, there's
it was a good salute. It was a nice position of attention, good, clean salute.
You know, also I got to say something about Trump, love him, hate him. He does go to the people. You know, he didn't have to come to this wrestling event. I mean, think about it. This is a wrestling event. Like, you know, I like
it's
sports.
A collegiate wrestling event. Yeah.
You know, I like sports. We don't care about this. You know
so yeah,
I mean?
This Oklahoma State kid, and he beat the Arizona State guy.
Right. Yeah. So that was it was a big deal for the actual competition. You know, the
sure.
Olympian loss. That was kind of the big deal. To me, there's the interesting not the interesting part about it, but there's an added controversy about oh, this is Trump. You know, he was in the audience, so on and so forth. I don't know if Trump knew that the guy was going to win. Like, I don't know how that happened, but you know, it's another one of those like just interesting kind of stories about like. How does Trump even know to be in that place for that a moment?
I mean,
you know
fair.
I mean?
That's
like,
a fair question. I've never given that any thought.
As far as like showmanship, I mean, Trump does got to have, you know, you got to give hats off to showmanship.
Well,
he does.
And we've talked about Trump ad nauseum before. Like my view of the man has shifted so much to the point. Like I honestly, again, without cable, it's one thing. But even just on social media, I no longer engage or remotely care, honestly, about like I laugh at there's people. Yeah. There's the pundits that. He is God, and everything he does is fucking gospel.
Yeah,
and then there's the other side,
yeah,
the extreme other side, which is he's Hitler and he's the devil, and everything he does is
right.
terrible.
Yeah.
And it's funny to me because it's like,
to me,
I want to ask the question over and over. I'm not trying to judge people, but how can you not see the forest for the trees? Like,
yeah.
they're so bad because X, Y, Z. Okay, well, what about you doing A, B, C? Well, that's and it's like that's different.
Yep.
And
I think
it's,
that's
it's,
what's
yeah, that it's like talking in circles.
To me, I think
sense?
That's what's the most valuable thing to the thems and theys is the idea that they can create.
Division.
Well, to me, it's like it's tribalism is like
sure.
the best analogy, right? It's like what is tribalism like in the grand societal thing? It's like okay, well, if I belong to this group. Like maybe I don't have to think about all the things that you know.
I think
it
was
you
that sent the group meme that was the anti-war unless my team or my
yeah.
My,
that, well, that's
my,
the theme of it,
charge,
right? It's
yeah.
like yeah, everything was terrible for when the last guy was in office. Now my guy's doing it. It's like well, you
it's
know what
different.
I mean?
It's better. It's what we're supposed to do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whatever. I got my problems with both of them. That's why I sent the you saw that, didn't you? The
yeah.
Dumb and Dumber. I just thought that was so brilliant. Anyways, so yeah, I think that's the to me, like. How the media or how the thems and theys will use that division, I think, is where their power is, right? The idea that you're so blinded that you'll just, you know, not even actually look at facts or logic or anything and just say, well, the other team's doing it, so it must be terrible, right?
Yeah.
Like the idea that anybody can, like, raise their hand and say, I don't like the fact that people are looking into the waste and fraud of the government. You know what I mean? Like, if that's your actual argument, then, like,
yeah.
get out of town. Like, you're nothing more than...
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I don't even know logically how to respond to that. You don't like that people are looking into the waste and misuse and mismanagement of shit
yeah.
of the government.
How about
so?
This?
So you'd rather them not look into it? You're okay with them
right.
misusing it, but not
yeah.
not being held accountable?
Yeah. Like Bernie Sanders said something the other day about Bernie Sanders. Is like Bernie Sanders, the government is corrupt, and we need to do something about that. So, my suggestion is more government. Like
perfect.
You know what I mean? Like vote harder. You know,
yes.
like that's what's. Yeah, like that's what this all is. So, yeah, I think we're on the same page with regard to the extremes of loving or hating Trump, or like the gross element of politics. Right in the middle is probably where we're gonna have like a real rational conversation. But they don't. That's not interesting to them. Right?
Well,
it's interesting. Is like I saw a bumper sticker. How about this? I'll show you the bumper sticker.
You
in just
you
a
find out. I was gonna say there's been two engagements at work recently where my fellow servers have said something about politics. You've seen this. You know what's going on here. And I said no, I don't pay attention. Actually, one of them asked me who I voted for. And good little simple conversations, but in summation, right, I tell them I don't care about it because, honestly, by getting riled up, you're missing what it is. It's the show. Welcome to the show. It's WWE. They're
yeah.
In public, we're enemies, blah, 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 whatever, but we're going to go have drinks and party afterwards.
Yeah, it's like the whole Tesla thing is so fascinating to me. It's like 5 minutes ago. The lefties were all into like, you know, saving the world and we have to drive electric, so on and so forth. And now it's like, well, now that Elon is with Trump and he's the devil,
yeah.
then, you know, fucking drill baby drill and, you know, electric cars are a terrible, you know what I mean?
And
like,
yay war and I mean everything. Yeah,
it's just so tribal. And that was kind of on display in that NCAA tournament a little bit. You saw that, like, you know, whatever. The guy can salute Trump all he wants and that's fine. You know, like to me, just the idea of like all presidents are kind of gross, you know what I mean? So like
sure, no,
anybody who
I remember what I said. To, yeah. Listen, what I appreciate is if proper greeting for the president is a salute for military people. Right? I don't know if this guy's military or not, but I, as a Marine, I love the good, clean salute, position
yeah.
of attention. It was a good salute,
yeah,
like, man. It was
like
a good salute.
Technique was good. Kept the elbow in.
Yes.
Knees were slightly
I'm
bent.
Dead serious.
Yeah, man.
I'm dead serious.
Deep breaths. I can see.
If
can
you're gonna
it.
Fucking do it right.
Real
man.
Recognize. You know, that's what it's all about, man. Making sure if you're gonna do it.
Do it.
Do
man.
It.
Dude, like,
right.
It's like, I'm going to wear a suit, but I'm not going to wear cufflinks.
Right.
Take the suit off. Take the fucking jacket off.
Man, I tell you what, I'm in a special place now where, okay, I'm stuck. Here's where I'm stuck. I'm stuck in this place of, like, I want to help people who otherwise put a bad outfit together. But then again, I also am, like, thankful that people can't dress themselves because, like, you know what I mean? Like, it does give people who can dress a bit of an advantage. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Saying?
Sure.
Yeah. So, like, same thing with, like, dumb people. when like people make bad decisions, like with their kids, for example, it's kind of like, oh, there's an instinct to like, oh man, I wish they didn't do that with their kid. There's also like, oh, my kids are not doing that. Thank goodness. You know what I mean? Like, you know.
No, I understand what you're
yeah,
saying.
You know.
And then we even take it that further, right? To say all that from a non-judgy place, etc. Yeah, I'm with you.
Oh yeah, does that need to be said? I'm not judging.
No,
I'm not judging. You do you, boo.
And that's right. I love that for you.
Yeah. 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 All right. I was talking to some people today about the moon landing, and this topic comes up so much in this podcast.
Ooh, you know what I was going to say, though? Just popped my head, though, coming up here, right? And I know it's, I want to just pop my head with moon landing, because I know it's one of your hot buttons. Uh-huh. Your favorite hot button, Joshua, is your favorite president.
Oh, you don't have any patience.
Assassination day coming
up. You don't have any patience. I was going to get there, but that's fine. We'll jump the gun. What I was going to say is, we were talking about conspiracy theories, and it got me thinking about like some things that are super interesting to me, and that is one of my favorite topics. And so at the restaurant I work at, I've started to sprinkle in my birthday is Abraham Lincoln Assassination Day also.
And for the record, folks that do listen to this podcast, that is exactly how Josh describes his birthday.
Glory, glory, hallelujah.
Verbatim.
Yeah.
It is Abraham Lincoln Assassination Day.
Yeah. So, so Abraham Lincoln, the reason I treat and I have this approach to Abraham Lincoln is because once upon a time, like, he was my dude. Okay.
And then you found out he was a vampire hunter.
Well, that amongst other things.
Yeah.
Hidden history. Well, so I've done this before on the podcast. I'll do it again. I'll do it every time you ask me.
I love it.
But so Abraham Lincoln, I remember vividly reading a textbook. And if you recall, sometimes textbooks would take like one little quote and like blow it up and like put it in the middle of the page and like, you know, huge. And it was like, Abraham Lincoln says, if I could free all the slaves to save the Union, I would do that. Right. And I'm like, bro, that's my yes.
It's amazing what we can do lying with facts and we just only give a segment and a piece.
Well,
right?
to me,
we can paint a picture.
To me, this is a larger problem. So let me finish my story. About the takeaway was like, man, that quote like really spoke to me. Yes, like that. You know what I mean? That's brave at that time. You know what I mean? And then you read the full quote, and it's like, if I could free the slaves and save the Union, I'll do that. But if I can keep the slaves and save the Union, I'll do that. And if I can free some and keep some, I'll do that too. Like, really, I just want to keep the Union. And it's like, oh.
Right, that was the meat and potatoes of the
quote.
Why
did they only serve me that little piece, you know? And then we're told that this guy is the great emancipator. It's like, okay, the great emancipator. What does that mean? We wrote this emancipation proclaimed and spoke this emancipation proclamation.
I don't listen to hip-hop.
So,
the Emancipation Proclamation.
I see what you did there. Not funny, but okay.
South Park right there. It's hilarious.
Okay.
Right. We've done that before, too.
Dun, 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 dun. Hold on, I got that on the sounder. So,
you have the Dun-Dun-Dun or South Park?
Dun-Dun-Dun. So, I was listening to a podcast or reading a book once upon a time, and they were talking about the Great Emancipator. It was like, he only freed the slaves in the belligerent states. So, the states that were the South, basically. The Confederate states, but kept the northern states could still have their slaves. You know, it's like,
yeah, that one needs the Nelson.
This one?
Well,
that's a little bit different.
Yeah, it's Nelson. Ha ha.
I don't use that enough, by the way.
Yeah, right. I felt like that was befitting of that of the of.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm gonna skip over
the belligerent states. I think that's my favorite part of that.
Yeah. We'll break down Abraham Lincoln as we get close. We're going
to
do this podcast a little bit more
than once every
6 months.
We need to do one like right around your birthday, birthday episode.
Yeah, we should. We'll do it.
We'll actually have to theme it all Abraham Lincoln, buddy.
Dude, don't you fucking throw it. I'm going to stop the podcast right now. Just go research.
Because we will get into
vampire
hunting, and we will get into Abraham Lincoln and the moon landing when he was there.
How Abraham Lincoln screwed up America. There's a book that I've read called that. Yeah, so Abraham Lincoln has a special. Oh, well, here's the real deal, right? So Abraham Lincoln, my dude, right? My dude from reading that one thing, also happens to be his assassination happened on my birthday, right? And so there's like, oh, what a cool connection. Not that I love the assassination part, but you know, my dude has a connection with me on my birthday, right? So like, this is me and my dude, right?
Yeah.
And of course, like the Civil War, like I remember as a kid, like really being fascinated with the Civil War. Like I just need to wrap my head around the idea that how can we fight our brothers? How can we fight our own people? How could we, you know what I mean? Like just didn't. So I dove deep. Yeah. Like, how could we do that? You know, and gosh darn it, those brave Northern soldiers who, you know, went on the most moral crusade of freeing those poor innocent black people. Anyways, and then, you know, and then I started reading other stuff, and it's like, well, okay, but if that's the truth, right? If that's the truth. This is the truth. You know what I mean? Like the fact that the North fucking burned towns, you know, to be women and children and, you know, slaves.
But,
right,
but only the ones that weren't belligerent, the non-belligerent.
Here's
ones.
The deal:
they were spared.
We're on a Starburst. Let's end the Abraham Lincoln. We're down the street. We're right around the corner. We're up the road from Abraham Lincoln Assassination Day. Keep your ears peeled. We are kind of getting close to the end of the podcast. But we do you have anything else like specifically you want to like get out tonight? We've got what are you into? We've got
We've got some remodeling going on. But actually, we've talked before about. Not necessarily a book club, but reading a book. Like I just started on my audiobooks while I drive to work. Chaos, okay. the other side of the Manson Helter Skelter.
Oh, thank goodness! You just started that.
I'm two chapters in.
Oh, goodness gracious! Okay, give me two chapters. What have you learned so far? And like we gotta do that.
Well, I don't know that I've learned anything. What I've learned from it is why like when you and I talked about it. So I read Helter Skelter. I have the book, Josh. Has now read Helter Skelter, but he did not start with Helter Skelter. He started with Chaos, this guy that's counter to Vincent Bugliosi, the prosecutor for the Manson trial.
Yeah, I kind of stumbled upon the book Chaos, but I'd heard of Helter Skelter, but never really dove into it. Like, I just knew the super surface level about what happened. But you read the book Helter Skelter, which Bugliosi, the author, was the prosecutor.
Yeah, he's a district attorney.
He's a prosecuting attorney, so he kind of has a certain way of writing the story. And there's a whole lot of, by the way, conspiracy theory around it.
Oh, yeah. No, and his, like, there's tons of detail. But what I do find thus far, two chapters into Chaos, is one of the most interesting to me is when he talks about going to meet Bugliosi at his house, how he wanted his wife to be there as basically a court reporter to keep record. They both had two tape recorders. He would say stuff off the record, make him turn them off. And then there was points where the author of Chaos says that, you know, he's threatened me that if I was to ever mention this or ever try to what's the fucking word? You shame somebody's name or fucking run us with dirt.
Defame or, yeah.
Yeah, that. Defamation. Then he would actually sue him on defamation and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, well, that's just one that's.
Super sus.
It's a completely different fact. I'm going to take it as fact because like, this is a guy saying this happened to me, right?
Yeah.
And if in fact that happened in your interview, like, then why would he have you there? It's all just really weird.
Yeah, and super sus.
And in no point does he say that Bugliosi ever challenged the things he actually was asking him about. It was only you're questioning or challenging my version of the story, what was produced, by the way, because you forgot that I'm a fucking bestseller and I'm the voice on this specific incident. And it's like, nobody's even saying anything about that. Here's what I want to ask you about. He's like, well, that's challenging me. What?
Yeah.
No.
It's kind of like, so you're two chapters in and you're already like feeling the defensiveness in a way that's like, okay, why would somebody who was comfortable in their reporting and their book would be so defensive, right? Is that kind of the vibe?
If you are in fact the authority on this, none of it's a lie, then why you wouldn't have to lie, you wouldn't have to defend these things. You actually should have, in my opinion, have an answer and not a version of the story, because that's what it sounds like. The author of Chaos is presenting, saying that Bugliosi's book, you know, bestseller, blah, 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 is a version of the story, and there's things that are omitted, and I believe they're on purpose, is what I feel him saying.
Yeah.
And when that was presented to Bugliosi, he was like, I'll sue you.
I get a vibe that Bugliosi is a bit of a kook also. He's just a touch of a kooky kind of fellow. You know what I mean?
Not necessarily. I don't know what you mean.
Like,
but
meaning like just the way you're going to have a recorder? You're going to have a tape recorder? Well, I'm going to have one too.
When they both had two, by the way.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like, well, okay, yeah, record it, fine, I don't care. But like, oh, you're going to have one? Well, I'm going to have one. You know, just the way he...
Well, the fact that he wanted his wife to be like a court reporter, like you wanted somebody there as a witness, that's bizarre.
All of it was, that's what I mean. It's just a kooky kind of guy. Did you hear the story, by the way, of that? Anyway, sorry to interrupt. ADD. anything else? Okay, Chaos. Anything else on Chaos in your first couple of chapters? I can't wait to like unpack this whole book.
Cause the other thing you said, but what are we into? Nicole and I, since the last podcast, we have delved into Dexter.
Okay.
The show that was on, you know, it's on Showtime or whatever it was, binging it, is, you know, stream stream watching, binge watching. That's just a thing now. We love it. Netflix. Dexter's fucking awesome. I can understand why he was up against Breaking Bad as far as what's Walter White and
For best actor.
Yeah. I also understand why I don't think he beat them. But he's good. Like, it's a good show. We're enjoying the hell out of it.
I think that probably, and I've never seen the show, I can understand the concept, but there's something about, like, vigilantism that's really on its face that, like, you have to deal with in that show. Like, right? Like, okay, in the grand scheme of things, bad people are getting bad things done to them, right? But in society, don't we have a mechanism for that? Like, that's kind of the to me, the moral, like, question is, like, okay, I'm not losing any sleep over bad things happening to bad people, but, like, you know, don't we have a process for that? Isn't that kind of what makes us different from everybody else? That's, you know, right.
But as you say that, like, I hear that, I understand that, like, premise, but I also smirk and give side eye to it because it's like, well, yeah, and that's why the system absolutely works all the time, and nobody murders people because they can get in trouble, they go to prison, they'll die, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, it's, yes, we have a mechanism, yes, we have a system, but that, like all the other systems,
it's
or
flawed.
Most of the other systems,
yeah, it's flawed.
Flawed.
Yeah, yeah. And like I've said before on this podcast about how victims oftentimes aren't the, like, high priority and, like, you know, solving crimes, like you know, the state gets their
well, yeah, restitution isn't. I agree. I've heard you present this, and I love it, right.
Yeah.
The person that should be able to determine what restitution, like, you kill a family member of mine. Yes, would I like them to die? Probably so, right? But does the state determining it or me determining it? There's a difference between actual restitution.
Yeah, who's being served? Who's justice serving?
Right. Right, yeah. Yeah.
My thing I'm into, and actually I really enjoy it. I've watched the whole season at least one, maybe two times properly all the way through, and I've exposed all my family members to it, and they all digging it. And that I think it's a five piece, and maybe they're adding to it. I just watched the first five piece, but it's about Christian Pulisic, who is so his moniker, by the way, I don't know if I said this earlier, Nick, but he's Captain America.
Yeah, yeah.
So he is a professional soccer player, American born, and you know, for soccer players like soccer fans like myself, you know, that one, like, huge missing, like, piece of, I don't know, like what Italians or Germans or the English or Argentinians or Brazilians have is, like, you know, sustained success or, like, deep success in the World Cup or, like, success on the international level. And there's an element of, like, you know, when an American player, like, shines in some of those foreign leagues, you know, you kind of take notice. And there's been a handful of them, you know, there's Americans have, you know, have performed, played regular minutes. Tim Howard's is a great example of that.
Ron Howard's brother, yes.
Ron Howard's little brother, yeah. Well, he's bigger than Ron Howard, but he's actually younger, so it's a weird thing.
Yeah,
different mothers and dads, but exactly. Same last name. What's his name? Fucking Deuce from Texas. I can't think of his name right now. It's embarrassing.
Deuce from Texas. Shit.
Jesus Christ.
I don't know Deuce from
Texas. Lennon Donovan played over there, but nobody really had, like you know, success where they were, like, the man in Europe necessarily. Christian Pulisic was good enough to go over there at around 16, 17 and make, you know, play regular minutes at a big club early on. To me, though, Nick, that is cool to understand that story, but they really tap into the human being, who he is, what made him, what was the thing that makes him tick. Both his parents played professionally, and he has this thing which just really, like, stuck to me. It was like he was talking about his mom played professionally. She played with the likes of Mia Hamm, and I don't think she played professionally, but she played at a level with those other like world-class players kind of before there was a women's league, I guess, maybe collegiately or otherwise. His dad played professionally and coached, like, indoor soccer kind of thing. Anyways, he was talking about, like, how his parents affect his play and, you know, who his mom is to him and who his dad is to him, so on and so forth. And he was kind of like, he had this little segment about how his dad kind of annoys him and knows how to push his buttons in just the perfect way to, like, drive him, you know. And I just felt like that really hit home for me. And you know, I just love that kind of, I guess, deep, you know, dive into the human being. Like, there's another guy on the show that talks about how there's, you know, there's the game on the field, you know, between the lines, and then there's the game that's off the field, right?
The mental game.
Yeah, and like, maybe it's the mental, maybe it's the support, maybe it's all the things going on around it that make, you know, whatever makes someone special, makes somebody good. I don't know, but the show is really, really good. Again, it's a bit nerdy for me because I'm a soccer fan, and this young man, like, there's an element, Nick, that, like, if I could go back to, you know, Josh at, like, 15 or 14 or 13 and think about, like, how I could, like, you know, fictionalize the perfect career, Christian Pulisic is living, like, Josh Schatzer's 14-year-old, professional career. You know what I mean? Like, playing big-time minutes at big-time clubs, you know. Also doing it in a really humble
way and high level, yeah. So one last thing I want to say before we get out of here was so we're into Dexter, been into that new podcast or that new book Chaos as well. The other, since our last one, our last podcast was obviously a while back. In the spirit of be present, I've talked to you about it. Florian John got me the hat and the shirt from Texas A&M baseball. They adopted the one word mantra, good, which is from former Navy SEAL commander team leader Jocko Willink. Mm-hmm. And I saw that on a Rogan podcast where he tells a quick story, which was, you know, former teammate called and said, I want to tell you what's going on. I got a problem. He's like, but I already know what you're going to tell me. He said, what am I going to tell you? He said, you're going to tell me good. He's like, you're goddamn right. I'm going to tell you that. Now tell me the story. And he tells him a story, and then he proceeds to say, you know what? He says, what? Good. Now you have something to focus on, right? Mm-hmm. It's a derivative of be present for me, but it's a mnemonic device. Yep. I've been using at work, and it's awesome that Flo got me the hat and the shirt. I've shared it with a couple of folks at work. They've used it back with me, and Nicole uses it here in the house. Like, it's
awesome.
It's fucking awesome.
I love it. Too bad A&M's terrible at baseball this year. Yeah. That being said,
first team to start out number one in the country and then fall out of the rankings in like less than a month.
Ted Lasso's coming back, season 4. You heard that? Season 4.
Ted Lasso.
You didn't watch it, the whole thing, but
I'm not.
It's gonna be focused on a women's team, believe it or not. He's gonna coach a women's team, but
nice.
Anyways, all right, my man. Woo, we did it.
We did that. Music means one thing. One space toast made us.
This one's gonna make it. This one's gonna make it, bro. What are we gonna do next time, my friend?
Same thing we do every podcast, Josh.
What's up, brother?
Try and save the world.
Boom.
Your Highness, Secretary General, Your Majesties, Your Royal Highnesses, Presidents, Prime Ministers, Ministers, ladies and gentlemen.